This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to My Millennial Money. I'm Glenn James and...
I'm John Pigeon.
Now, Johnny boy, we have just announced the M3 National Tour. Are you pumped?
I am excited.
I know. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Now, for the sporting nerds, I checked my AFL fixture when you gave me those dates.
Yeah.
Because I get told what to do, listeners. I don't get a say in anything. And coincidentally, there's some unbelievable games the day after we have our shows.
Really?
Right around the country.
Really?
So I'm pumped about that just as much as seeing people in the flesh.
Yeah. Wow. Mm. And I mean, just to be clear, John, you know, this isn't a democracy, it's a dictatorship. So
that's right.
You will be. So I think I emailed you on the weekend with the tour dates and I said, I don't care what you do, but I want you in these cities by 4 p.m., the day of the tour, and send me the bill for the flights.
So I had to cancel all my family holidays and there was uproar.
So I'm looking forward to the tour, John, because what I want to do in each capital city, and you can go to sortyourmoneyout.com and click tour or sortyourmoneyout.com/tour. And we're doing every capital city except for Darwin.
Sorry.
Sorry, Darwin. Maybe next time. It's just not enough of you there. Because to fly John and his rider along...
Entourage.
Yeah, it just gets expensive.
It does.
So we've got national brand partners. So we've got Bricklet and Open Trader, which you'll hear more from. But in each capital city, I might get John to do a bit of an update on property, of what's happening on the ground there.
Yes.
And we are asking you questions when you register. So at least we know who's going to be in the room. So if there's 100 people... and 80% of first home buyers, we can tailor the content to who's in the room.
We can.
Or if there's, you know, 80% people who already own their home or who are share investors. So the plan is the first hour we kind of do interactive, some teaching, some chatting, and that's not recorded. And then we'll record a live episode with all our people with us.
Yeah.
So come along. Tickets are only $75 and that includes food and drinks. We try to do as many as possible on a Friday night so you can let the hair down a little bit.
Get sloshed.
Get sloshed, yes. But we're going to have a great time. So we're looking forward to seeing you. But make sure you get your tickets because, you know, even Sydney, we can only have 130 people in that venue.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because some of these venues, John... One hotel, they wanted to charge a minimum of $19,000.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's like, this isn't a you know, an old school property thing where we're getting people in for free and we're selling in $5,000 packages.
That's
like, this is, so we're thankful that you can invest money and come along, get fed, get dranked, and we're thankful for the national partners, Bricklet and Open Trader, and we're thankful for the local financial advisors and mortgage brokers that we're going to try and get for each event.
Yeah. So I know all around the country, the people will be awesome, won't they? But which actual capital city are you looking forward to most?
Oh, John, don't do this to me.
not the people, it's just the which city are you looking forward to?
To be honest, I'm keen to get over to Perth.
Are you?
Yeah. Because I've only been to Perth once.
Yeah.
What about you?
Mine's actually Hobart. Because I've never been to Hobart.
Really?
No.
Yeah. Well, I was actually going to say, I'm looking forward to Hobart because it's probably likely to be our smallest audience.
Yes.
And we might, I think last time I was there when I did that event, you weren't there, but I think there was only like 25, 30 people.
Yeah.
And it was just so fun. So, and maybe, look, if you are in Brisbane or Sydney and you want to come to the Hobart event instead, maybe organise a long weekend and come down to Hobart with us.
That's right. Or if you're in Darwin, you can fly to Hobart.
Or Adelaide. Or Perth.
Or Perth.
Wherever.
Or Bali.
Or Bali, yeah. So, look, we're looking forward to it. Lots of fun. And we're ready to answer some questions now. You ready to get into this, Johnny boy?
Let's do it.
Okay, this one here, Tanaya in the Facebook group, and this was only a very recent post. She asked, just wondering what the financial implications are of selling a house around 2 years after having purchased it. So, John, let's break this down.
Yes.
Generally speaking, if you've got a house, there's usually only two ways that you would hold this house. One to live in and one as an investment property.
Yep.
So let's talk about the financial ramifications if you've sold the house or about to after living in it for 2 years. What are the ramifications for the home if it is the house that you're living in?
Okay, so it is their own home. They've lived in it. They've had it for 2 years. Generally speaking, there'd be no capital gains tax applied.
Yeah. So argument's sake, if they paid 500 grand for it, in the 12 months that they've lived in it, it may have increased to $600,000.
Yep.
Ordinarily, if it was an investment property, the gain of $100,000 would be assessable gain as a capital gain.
Mm-hmm.
Ordinarily, and we've kind of probably got to answer this both ways at the same time. Ordinarily, if that property was an investment property, that $100,000 worth of growth would be taxable. And because you've held that asset for more than 12 months, you could apply some capital gains tax discount.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the main discount that is used is the 50% rule, which would mean that 50% of $100,000, the gain, or $50,000 would be added on to your taxable income and you're taxed at your marginal tax rate.
Yep.
Now, if it was an investment property that was owned by a spouse and their partner or the two spouses, how would you say, what's a plural for spouse? By spouses?
You should only have one.
Yeah. But if it was owned by both,
yep,
that $50,000 would be split, so 25 grand on each person's tax return.
Yeah, as long as their split was 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess what we're saying is there are financial implications, even if there's no capital gains tax. Mm. You know, you've got to pay agent's fees.
Yes.
If you're selling it through an agent. So, John, I would probably hypothesize that if someone paid $500,000 for the property, 2 years later, it was still only worth
$500,000.
Mm. Once they sell that, it could be at a loss.
Yeah, especially when you look at, because I look at financial implications at the start and at the end, and the cost of transacting in property is not that cheap compared to, say, shares.
Mm.
So stamp duty was applied at the start most of the time, unless it's first home buy. So you might include 20 grand at the start, depending on which state you're in.
Mm.
As well as your 2%, 10 grand at the end for selling fees, plus your marketing fees. If it was auction, you pay an auctioning fee.
Mm.
So, yeah, if you're selling it for less than 550, there'd really be no profit.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important, guys, when you are thinking about purchasing a house, whether it's a house to live in or an investment property, it is a growth asset. So we need to have the mindset, I think, going in, John, that we need to hold this for maybe at least 7 years.
Yeah, unless we're doing some extreme improvements to it.
Yeah, like you might have stole a shack, you know, knocked it over, did a development.
Yeah.
So there are financial implications, both if you live in the house and as an investment property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will just add, John, and this can be nuanced, so I think we might just tell people, speak to your accountant or financial advisor before you do anything, because there is a main residence exemption rule. And you could just Google main residence exemption, ATO, and it's often called the 6U rule. So I'll use an example. If you were living in your house under the main residence exemption, you got the caravan and the kids like you just did around New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
You had someone in the house, you know, renting it,
yep,
and you didn't have any other home as your main resident and you're caravanning around, not paying rent, or whether you're paying rent, it didn't really matter.
Yep.
You've really got 6 years that you can sell that property and still get capital gains tax exemption. So I just want to flag the 6 year rule right now, and I want to wrap that in. You just need to get some advice and talk to your accountant before you do anything. So just on this main residence exemption, because we do need to pad this with get advice from your accountant, John, can you pull up the ATO website there and just read a little bit of that?
Yeah, so it says, when does a dwelling stop being your main residence? Indicators that a dwelling has stopped being your main residence include you and your family no longer live in it, your personal belongings are not kept in it, it is no longer the address your mail is delivered to, it is no longer your address on the electoral roll, and services such as gas and power are no longer connected. So you could be living out of the property and potentially renting it out, but have taken all your personal belongings because it's not a furnished home, and you could be liable. So it's really important to chat to your accountant.
And that's right, and have some planning around it. Mm. So I want to dig deeper into this financial implications of selling a house around 2 years after purchasing it.
Yeah.
We need to know how much it's worth. And often, there's usually two opinions. It's the agent who's trying to get the sale, mm-hmm. so the agent can then sell it.
Yeah.
And secondly, there's the bank vow that the bank might send out to get a value for borrowing, mm-hmm. which is conservative usually. So some implications, John, could be if it's not worth anything, if it's not worth more than what you paid for it, we don't want to sell it and have it at a loss. So we need to think of implications. If we could keep the property and have a tenant in it, and instead of taking a bath on $30,000, take a bath on $5,000 a year to keep it as an investment property, cash flow it, negatively gear, and then review in a couple of years.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Kind of take the risk, and instead of taking a 20 grand bath, if it has gone down in value, go, look, we're just going to assess in 12 months. We'll take a 5 grand bath over the first year now.
Yeah.
And at least we can claim that on tax.
Yeah.
So it's just about being strategic, isn't it?
Yeah. I think you just got to first ask yourself, why are you selling?
Mm.
Like, you should want to sell, not have to sell. So you don't want to get yourself in a position where you have to sell. But it's a really good question at this time, because property prices in general around the country have gone north in the last couple of years. So there may be the word greed coming into the conversation where, okay, I've got a property, 500 grand, it's now worth 700 grand. I'm going to take my money and run, right? Because that's great. I've never made 200 grand in my life. But
the old classic smash and grab.
Yeah. Well, like, where are we putting it? And what are we going to do with that 200 grand? And it's not actually 200 grand when you factor in the stamp you've paid, if you've paid it, agents' costs, the cost of transacting. So people look at the raw numbers. Yes, it's gone up 200 grand, but it's not actually. And where are we going to put that money if we do sell it? So, yeah, you've got to know the long-term outcome for your financial wealth as well.
And I guess if you're selling a house 2 years after purchasing it due to a relationship breakdown – well, we know relationship breakdowns can cost money.
Yeah.
And this could just exacerbate that cost if it isn't worth more than what you paid for it.
Yeah.
And it's just – and this is why I'm just camping here a little bit. Property does not always go up in value. There is markets working within markets, you know. Mm. The property price could be humming along, you know, on the front page of the newspaper, but – apartment dwellings in capital cities might have taken a bath. So we just need to get some advice. If in doubt, talk to somebody.
Yeah, and as you said before, like, what's the other alternative as opposed to selling? So can you take advantage of that growth in the market? Because in a heated market, the valuers are jumping out a bit. They're pretty happy to come and value a home confidently because they've seen such rises. So it's going to get valued pretty well. Can you lock that in by extracting some equity and then being able to build the portfolio versus trading one for another?
Totally. Siobhan had a question here. In one of your very early episodes, good goodness, don't bring that up, you mentioned your rent shouldn't be more than 30% of your pay. Mine is 50%, but I'm struggling to find a job with a higher income. Any tips? So, John, as a general rule of thumb, we know that, you know, if you've got a mortgage and your, and we talk about these percentages as a take-home salary, so a net pay.
Yeah.
If your mortgage is like 40% or more of your net take-home, you're in mortgage stress.
Yeah.
And what that can lead to is, you know, you borrow money to pay for other living costs. So things just can cascade and your quality of life can be decreased because of it. Now, we say under 30% is good, 25% is great.
Ideal.
20% is amazing. And remember, zero is unicorn tears and rainbows because it means you own the place or you don't have to pay your rent or mortgage.
Yep.
So, Siobhan, what I would probably suggest is I have a look at a couple of things with this. I want you to work out if it's 50% of your net take home and then can it change within the next 6 months? And you've only talked about one side of the equation here to find a job with a higher income. You might have to do the other side of the equation and move somewhere with cheaper rent, which might not be possible, but we know it's not sustainable because you know you're struggling now. And I'd really encourage you to see if it can change. Like I was talking to someone just yesterday, John, and they're moving into a new property. And I said, oh, is the net take home under 30%? And he crunched the numbers and he goes, oh, it's 38. And I said, well, before you pull the trigger on that, you need to line up some other ducks. And if you can't get that down to under 30% within the first 6 months to a year, I think it's a showstopper because it's just too much house.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think, like, she doesn't say that she's struggling, but she's just looking at the percentage and saying, wow, that's higher than what Glenn's preaching. So I think it does depend on what else is happening in her life as well. Like if there's a car loan and credit cards and they eat a lot and there's three kids, like there's a lot of expenditure in the life. So 50% is massive. But if single, no car loans, no credit card debt, no major expenses other than that, and she appreciates the fact that she's got her dream home or whatever it is, then she might be okay.
Yeah, I'm still saying it's not good longer term because
we want to get it down.
We want to get it down so we can maybe invest more for our future.
Yeah.
So we can have a good quality of life. So we can give more. So we just know that, you know, it's not ideal in the long term.
No.
But we want to make sure within the very short term, almost clipping medium term. So I'm thinking less than a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
At a maximum.
I think we both agree that getting a higher paying job doesn't fix everything. But she might have made the decision, oh, I'm going into a blue chip suburb, I'm taking on a bit more debt, but I think the growth's going to be far superior, whatever, and I've got buffers in my life, I might be okay in the short term.
Yeah. So we'll leave that there. Do you want to read that question from Patty Fuzz?
Patty, leaving the corporate world to do a carpentry apprenticeship, three steps back, got 10 forward. How to save while reducing a wage? Glenn.
Well, I think it goes to this, it's almost like the rent thing. It's like, you know, just because it's a tight squeeze, it's okay to go through a period of a tight squeeze, whether we're paying down debt, whether we're aggressively saving for a mortgage deposit, whether we are aggressively, you know, trying to invest in our own career. I think the tight squeeze with a good goal at the end of it can be fine. I wouldn't want people to be in a tight squeeze for really more than a year or so because it can just get too onerous on our life.
Stressful, yeah.
But I would probably say, Patty, while you're doing the carpentry apprenticeship, you need to do a couple of things. Number one, you've got to make sure you're just staying away from all consumer debt. You want your budget to be as lean and as mean as possible.
Yeah.
You want your rent to be as lean as mean as possible because we know during apprenticeships and traineeships, the money isn't great. And sometimes we have to take some steps back to go forward.
Yep.
I would also say, I just want you to maybe get to a point where, you know, you've saved maybe just a $2,000 emergency fund because while you're on a lower income, the thing isn't to save more money. The thing is to make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck with what you've got and investing in your own education, which means apprenticeship.
Yep.
So like I say, when you're at university, I don't care if you leave university and you've got $1 to your name, you've kept away from consumer debt, and you've worked on your good habits and behaviors with the money that you do have. If you can get to the end of university, if you can get to the end of your apprenticeship with no consumer debt, with $1 savings, we can do a lot with that. So take the pressure off yourself. You're actually investing at the moment. You're investing into your own life and career. Now, I will say on a practical terms, I know a lot of apprentices, maybe after the first year, they could have built my back deck. Can you go and help people repair decks? Can you go and get some extra cash on the side with the permission of your employer?
Yeah.
And do some little cashies?
Yeah. So first of all, Paddy, well done on taking the plunge out of the corporate world and getting into an apprenticeship. Like I'm just surmising here, but it's probably replacing clean hands work with dirty hands work. So that's a big step, isn't it? Out of your comfort zone potentially to maybe pursue something that you're more passionate about. And to take a hit on the wallet. But you're right, weekend work, cashies. I've got a client who actually bought a property about 12 months ago, who's second or third year carpentry apprentice, and was basically created his deposit through his weekend work. So, yeah, he can lend on it, so there's no holding him back there, and he can get some cashies to keep moving forward.
Yeah, so that's just an encouragement to everybody. If you don't like what you're doing and you want to make a change, I took the view when I sold my financial planning business, it was kind of like, oh, I'm at the top of this mountain, you know, I'm the big fish in the pond or whatever it was, and now I'm going to do podcasting. I went from a cracking income to nothing overnight.
Yeah.
Now, what I've kind of described it as, whether you are changing careers, whether you are starting a business, it's the bow and arrow. To shoot the arrow, there's a period of time where you've got to pull back, where you've got to put pressure on, where it is tight, it is hard. But baby, once you get to the end of that, it stops and you let go and your career will go flying. So if that's a metaphor for you out there in
it's a good metaphor.
Listener land.
And you've really hit the bullseye, haven't you?
I've nailed that, John. Oh, dear goodness. Okay. So speaking of dad jokes, right? I look at the podcast reviews, John, on Apple.
Do you?
Now, I try not to that much because my feelings get hurt when people have a go at me. But someone said this the other day. I love this. Oh, it's actually really long. It's AmyK_91. I've listened from the start and compared to other financial podcasts, I find M3 in very good depth and it's detailed. I feel Glenn actually reads his reviews and tries to grow and do better. So you're right. Like, so I look at the reviews just for trends. So if there's 8 reviews in a row saying, you know, you're doing this wrong or this sucks, it's a trend. We need to address it. But we can't please everyone.
No.
But, oh yeah, and it goes on and says, Glenn is an open book, honest, knowledgeable and human. Thank you. John is like a classic kind of dorky but lovable dad.
Oh, dorky. Thanks, Amy.
Yeah.
Love it.
So if you do listen on Apple, why don't you jump in, give us a 5-star if you do like our content.
Yeah.
And leave a nice review. And maybe we should read some nice reviews every now and again.
Let's do that.
So, yeah, that would be fun. So, on your Paddy for having it a crack.
Well done.
And we'll be right back after this and we're going to talk about credit and lending.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
So John, Dean Morrison says, credit and lending, what's important? Who does it well? Can you ever borrow money strategically? should you borrow for everyday things? I'm going to let you answer this.
All right, thanks. So what's important with credit and lending? Well, a good track record helps. You don't necessarily need a track record to get lending, but if you've been on the earth for a while paying bills, then and you're paying them on time, then that's a massive positive. You haven't gone applying for too many loans and didn't get them or been rejected or just willy-nilly went about getting credit cards and car loans and personal loans, etc. So who does it well? I'm not sure if he's referring to lenders or actual individuals, but...
I would say lenders. And to that, I would probably say it's just so important why you do need to speak to a mortgage broker.
Yeah, so we're not applying for multiple loans at any one time or well, multiple
that,
lenders.
Well, they know that, hey, I'm a dentist, for example, and the mortgage broker will say, yeah, we've got this, we know this product over here that it's great for dentists because of this reason.
Yeah.
Or if you just went down to the local credit union, you know, whether you're a dentist or a farmer, you get the same thing.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know. Like you could go and apply for a loan at Westpac and get approved and that's all well and good, but you don't know if you didn't compare the others as to what if there was something better out there.
So
can you ever borrow money strategically? Yes, you definitely can. Strategically for mainstream lending is what I refer to as low doc loans. So a lot of self-employed go down that path where they might just give them the BAS statements or tax returns and that's it, or even just an accountant's declaration to say, yeah, Glenn James can afford X amount, give him a loan sort of thing. There's a premium that comes with that though, so you'll pay a higher interest rate, so just be aware of that. Personal lending or private investing is definitely a way to get a loan, but again, you pay a premium for that. So investment companies or just people that have got some cash laying around and say, I wouldn't mind lending it, they're going to add their premium on top of that as opposed to a mainstream lender. Mm.
Should you borrow for everyday things?
I think we all know the answer to that. Definitely no. we just, if we can't afford it and it's not going to make us money, don't do it.
Yeah, I just actually this morning before you got here, reshot the whole how to get out of debt module for the spending plan.
Right.
And it's like 55-minute module. So I'm wound up, John, and I'm ready to go. So just on the credit and lending, John touched on it. Don't worry about your dumb credit score. And the reason I say that, there is not a national government body who dishes out credit scores. There's three main bureaus in Australia, Equifax, Elyon, and I think Experian. And they have different customers. So one Telstra might use one of them, Energy Australia might use the other one, and their own internal algorithms will produce a score what they think. So there's not one credit score. There's not one standard in Australia. Mm. When you're going for a loan, the banks will sweep either all or one or two of the bureaus and get a report, and they will build their own credit profile.
Yep.
Now, they'll also look at your bank statements and say, oh, Johnny boy over here, yep, that's sweet. There's $100 at the RSL because it was Anzac Day yesterday. He played some two up. But we've seen $100 from the RSL every second day. Johnny boy over here has a problem, it seems, with maybe gambling or maybe something. So the fact that there's $100 out of the ATM at the RSL every day might be a bigger deal if he's got a perfect credit score.
Yes.
And the banks will make that judgment. Also, if they say Afterpay, if they say ZipPay, all this crap, while it doesn't go on your credit score, the bank will form their own profile. So as a good conscientious lender and applicant, the best thing that you can do is pay your bills on time, have money in the bank, keep out of consumer debt. We are not America. We do not need a credit score to get car insurance. We do not need a credit score to get life insurance, health insurance, a dating app, rent. It's actually rubbish. And these companies, they'll go out there and say, sign up with us and we can give you a free credit score. It's a hook. Don't worry about it. Move on.
Amen.
I'll stop there. Amen.
Catherine Mack.
Yeah. So, Catherine, money stress contributing to poor mental health?
We've pretty much answered this in a number of the questions today.
Mm.
Well, it's going to be a similar answer, I suppose, what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah, with money stress, I don't know the size of the situation, but again, money in, money out, what's happening in that space. And if we have some regrets over what we've spent, then just start looking forward and don't look in the rear vision mirror of what you've done. Just change the story you're telling yourself to get a better result.
Mm. Yeah, I think I touched on this in reshooting the spending plan. You've got to organize your money so there's a system. So at least we know, and the spending plan, like, it has the spreadsheet, and it is archaic that we're doing a spreadsheet, but what it does, it helps you understand this page you put your income, this page you put all your expenses, this page will tell you how much to put in what account each week. So just having it laid out there helps you understand and just know that, and it'll give you percentages and all that stuff. So you need a plan. Now, relating to money stress contributing to poor mental health, sometimes there can be money stress, as in I don't have enough money, my income and my mortgage, the ratio, or that my income and my rent to ratio is at 50%, like Siobhan was asking. Mm. That's causing some actual stress because I literally have zero money left at the end of the week. What I would say is sometimes in our lives, the problem can present in a different way. So an example, and this is just from me talking with people over numerous years, you might be having a rough trot with your relationship and you think, oh, this relationship sucks, this relationship sucks. But no, you hate your job and that's not happy. And it's manifesting when you get home. And you. So what I would probably encourage Catherine to do is first try and identify the actual stressor. And you can go to your GP, get a mental health plan, get some, you know, I think the government provide psychologist appointments, because it's just so important to identify the stressor. And you said it really good, John. You've got to get to the point, it's like, we're here now, forget the past. Mm. What can we do tomorrow? What can we do for the future? So I think it is multifaceted that we need to look at income, we need to look at expenses, we need to look at debt, we need to look at everything, savings rate and the spending plan or having a spreadsheet. And if you don't have that, get a bit of paper, write down everything. Look at your bank statements, see, do an autopsy. Where is the money going?
Yep.
See if you can pinpoint the money stress. Mm. Now, what if there was, it was really tight and your mortgage was 40, 50% of your income? What if for a short period of time, we change the mortgage repayment to interest only so we can have a breather, press reset, we need to sell the house, we need to downscale or whatever that is. So I think it's important, John, to identify and pinpoint and then have a plan.
Totally. No, it's very, very good recommendation. One thing I'll just finish on that for Catherine is, not saying you're in this position at all, but are we thinking about what others think of us? So that might actually be compounding the issue. I should be in a better position at my age, or my friends are doing this, that and otherwise. So just making sure you're actually worrying about yourself and not what others think of you in this position, maybe.
Yeah.
But also overall, that word health, like, my mental health is one thing, my physical health is another. So if we're eating crappy, not getting enough sleep, not exercising.
You're talking to me?
No, but if you want to take inspiration from what I'm about to say, then feel free.
Yeah, I will.
So our mental health is improved when our physical health is at its peak as well. So it's overall health as well as not just focusing on how much is in my bank account.
Yeah, and I think it's important to go back to that identification. It could be that you've got, you know, clinical depression. So I take Effexor 75 milligram a day. It's a lowish dose. It keeps me stable and all that stuff. Now, if I'm untreated, I can be doing dumb things with my money and that can be causing money stress because I'm not whole.
Yeah.
And in the new spending plan video that we did, far out, we did so many videos. It's like 17 videos.
Wow.
And we're going to roll out them in the coming months. And everyone, there's a price increase going up. So if you haven't bought the spending plan and you want to get into it,
get in
and you will get all the updated stuff included. But there was this thing, and I use the example, this young lady who was in the Facebook group at some point over the last couple of years, and she bought a $6,000 Prada bag with credit.
Right.
Now, clearly that's a lot of money, whether you earn $200,000 a year or $20,000. Like, let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, I want everyone to have a Prada handbag if they want it, or a Gucci handbag, whatever it was. But you've got to be able to afford it.
Yeah.
Now, her buying that put a lot of pressure in her life. And so the financial stress was self-induced.
Mm. Yeah.
Was she depressed? Don't know. Maybe not. We do dumb stuff without having clinical depression.
Yeah.
But I just think there's such a correlation, John.
Circumstance.
And we need to make sure we're sleeping, eating healthy, and exercising.
Yeah, totally.
Because then it allows us to tackle stuff with more resolve and resilience as well.
Yeah. And more sleep before midnight as well.
Oh, seriously, 10:30 p.m., if I'm not well and truly on the way to checked out, you know, that's kind of my sweet spot.
Yep.
And then Christina says, tips for a successful mortgage application. Well, I think we kind of covered that with Dean's question.
Yeah.
But work with your mortgage broker. I reckon, John, the best time to go to a mortgage broker is possibly you've got a good savings rhythm happening. Mm. You might have 5% of a down payment. So if you want to buy a unit for $500,000, you've at least got $25,000 and you got the wheels spinning. Mm. And then you can go to the mortgage broker, tell them your situation, and get the tips from them that's customizable to your situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's especially at the time now with, I suppose, more people buying property than ever, I think, is that lending times, the turnaround times are obscene. Like, we're talking some cases 3 weeks before your application even gets picked up.
Mm.
So having the expectation of, well, it's going to take double the time that I thought it was, so I'm going to prepare myself for that, not get frustrated from that point of view. So if we've got that up our sleeve, we don't get frustrated when we're sitting down with our mortgage broker and we actually start blaming the mortgage broker because the turnaround times aren't quick enough. Well, it's just the lenders. And the mortgage broker also know what the turnaround times for each bank are. Westpac might be 5 weeks, but CBA might be 3 days. It might actually determine which lender you end up using.
Totally. And just on that, the reason why the lenders are so pumped at the moment, number one, you know, the government's given out free money, interest rates are at record lows, blah, blah, blah. That in itself, it's busy out there. But COVID, what happened was a lot of these banks and lenders had their processing centers offshore.
Mm.
Now, I was at an event a couple of weeks back with ING. I got invited and, you know, met the CEO, Melanie Evans, and I'm going to get Melanie on the podcast just to chat because, you know, really good story there. Like, she'd been with the bank some time. You know, they didn't bring in a CEO from outside. And anyway, I think it's just, it's just refreshing. But anyway, so I was talking to them and they've got their processing staff in Australia.
Yeah.
But some of these other banks and lenders, they had their processing staff, say, in the Philippines. The Philippines call centers with COVID got shut down and no one could work from home, one, due to security and data, and two, due to unsecure internet and stuff like that. So it literally, a lot of these banks and lenders stopped overnight for months. So there's this backlog.
Yeah, and they're not always transparent about that either.
Mm.
They don't want to go to the cold face and tell the client that.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
And it can affect what you purchase.
Totally. So Just on that, if you are, and thanks everyone for sending in their questions, you can email questions at mymillennial.money and email your questions in and we'll add it to the question bank. Just in finishing up, we are excited to hit the road.
We are.
Are you right? You've distracted my train of thought with what you're doing over there.
I'm not doing anything.
Oh, you've bloody got your phone. I thought you were taking a phone call or something.
No, well, you were videoing me before. And
I wasn't videoing. Was it was a single what photo. Single right. photo, yeah.
Did you get my permission?
No.
No.
And I'm going to plaster it everywhere and sell it. But, John, we're pumped to hit the road. Mm. Now, we've got some financial advisors and mortgage brokers locked in for Perth, maybe Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, if you're a mortgage broker and you want to sponsor one of the local events and answer questions with us and all that, reach out to me.
Mm.
glenn.james@sortyourmoneyout.com.
Or if you just want to email Glenn for no real reason, yeah, do
well,
that
Henry
as well.
The VA kind of looks at that inbox and filters. So yeah, I don't mind advertising that inbox because Henry uses it a lot of the time.
Good on you, Henry.
But yeah, so if you're a mortgage broker maybe in Adelaide or Hobart or Canberra and you want to maybe sell your wares and teach us about mortgages and maybe get some clients from these events, you're welcome to reach out, glenn.james@sortyourmoneyout.com. Awesome. And I'll let you know what's required.
Yeah.
But yeah, sortyourmoneyout.com/tour. We're hitting the road, John.
Can't wait.
And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. No.
So we're going to fly probably from Sydney to Adelaide and do Adelaide and Perth in the 1 week.
Yeah.
So what's the, like, so you fly with Virgin usually. Are they still a thing? Are they happening?
I don't know. It's been that long since I jumped on a plane.
Yeah.
So I'm going this Friday, but it's Qantas.
Yeah, right. Mm. Where are you going?
Sunny Mildura.
Why?
It was weird. When I was on the roadshow,
yeah,
my own family roadshow, yeah. someone reached out to me when I was in the area and said, oh, can you run a corporate workshop for us, my team, on property and everything else? So I said, yeah, cool, I'll just come back.
Yeah. And if you want John to ever come to your workplace and do workshops for your team or organisations, we'll send him because people ask me, but I can't be bothered, to be frank.
Well, I charge half the amount that Glenn does.
Yeah, that too. But but no, John, you are most suited to that type of thing.
I love it, actually. Yeah. I could never stop. I can't see myself never not doing that stuff. I love it.
Yeah, and he's cheaper than me. I just pull my prices up because I can't be bothered.
I noticed.
But, it's so, and this is why I like these road shows, John. I like that we're not doing them all week, because I just get so, because being an introvert, you know, for the fellow introverts out there, if you're talking in front of people and presenting, like, it's draining, like hardcore. So,
yeah, you sleep well that night, don't you?
Yeah, very much so. Mm. All right, everyone, sortyourmoneyout.com/tour. Get the tickets while the getting's good. This episode's going up, I think, the second week of May, and I'll be in New Zealand. I was supposed to go to Christchurch. I think we mentioned this one of the episodes last week, but Qantas cancelled the flight. And Phil Thompson, who was recently on the insurance episode, because I said to Phil, why don't you come over and work from there for a week with me?
Yes.
And I said, I'm not there to play with you and all that stuff and sightsee. I just want a friend to, you know, go to dinner with or have brekkie or whatever. So he's coming over with me and he goes, oh, cancel Christchurch and go to Queenstown because Qantas have a direct from Melbourne to Queenstown.
Ah, do they?
And I said, nah, not cancelling my ticket. If you want to come, I'll be in Christchurch. Mm. But then when Qantas cancelled, I rebooked Queenstown. And Phil's going to come and meet me over there for a couple of days and get some work done.
Beautiful.
So next week's podcast, I've got to record and I might do it with Phil there on site. So
cool.
All right, peeps, thank you so much for listening.
Yep.
You've been real. I've been Glenn. This has been John Pigeon. Bye.
See ya.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.